One of the world's leading experts in robotics and artificial intelligence is Dr. Kenneth Ford, and he's at University College Cork this weekend for the George Boole Bicentenary celebrations. Amongst his many accolades, Kenneth Ford has been awarded NASA's Distinguished Public Service Medal. He's been an advisor to the US Air Force, was nominated by President George W. Bush to serve on the National Science Board. Recently, his own research institute built an award-winning robot called Running Man, which was designed specifically to help people during disasters. And Kenneth is with us now. Kenneth, you found the Institute for Human and Machine Cognition, and that was way back in 1990, 25 years ago. What is the role exactly of the Institute?
Well, we're a not-for-profit research institute operated by the university system in Florida, and the purpose of IHMC is to develop new science and technology aimed at extending human performance and resilience. And this could be cognitive performance, physical performance, locomotion, sort of the whole ball of wax.
What is the aim? Is it just basically simply to bring machines and humans together to create the best things that can happen with those two together?
In a sense, it's to amplify. With respect to cognition, it's to really not think of our endeavor as artificial intelligence, just as one no longer calls heavier-than-air flight artificial flight, right? The aircraft really, truly are flying. So we're interested in AI from the amplified intelligence perspective. How do we amplify human intelligence by interaction with our machines?
Well, I could ask you that question. How does one? I mean, like, if you're talking AI, we're talking artificial intelligence. What about now, over the last 4 or 5 years? How far have we got? How far have you got?
Well, the field goes through, as most fields do, through cycles, with periods where progress is rapid and periods where it's slow. We're into another rapid cycle now. It's come quite a ways, but it's important to appreciate that the goal isn't, as many pundits imagine, to build an artificial human, just as it's not the goal of, like, say, aeronautical engineers to build a bird. And what we're really trying to do is build intelligent systems that are intelligent differently than us, and thereby complement us.
Well, then, in the recent the robotics competition in California, you took second place with the Running Man. You know, what is the Running Man? What significance is there for us in that creation?
Running Man is a bipedal robot. The only locomotion available to Running Man is walking, like we walk. And DARPA's motivation, DARPA was the sponsor, the motivation they had was Fukushima. So as everyone can appreciate, Japan is chock-a-block with robots. And yet, they weren't really very useful in Fukushima, because Fukushima, like all other human-built environments, was designed for us. So the building assumed you could open doors, you could go upstairs, you could walk along a catwalk. And wheeled robots can't do any of those things. So the idea was to have a worldwide competition, starting with 100 entrants and then whittling it down. And the presumption was to have a walking robot solve a wide range of tasks, including driving a vehicle, climbing stairs, using human tools that would be relevant in a disaster environment.
And has it ever been, like, I mean, has it been out there doing things like that? I mean, I know that, like, for instance, there's disaster areas hazardous to humans, like nuclear disasters, etc. But, like, have you used that out in the field yet, if that's the word for it?
No. The kind of robots that were involved in the DARPA Robotics Challenge are research robots. So these robots are pushing the state of the art and often a little bit past it. The robots that are used currently in disasters are much simpler, more mature robots that cannot do any of the tasks I just mentioned.
And the tasks that it can do, Running Man, I mean, are we talking here about climbing ladders and driving cars and all that kind of stuff?
Right, and using human hand tools and, you know, cutting a pattern out a sheetrock wall, for example, to get to a valve. Going over piles of rubble. You know, Running Man's hardware is built by Boston Dynamics. It's a robotics company out of Boston that was recently acquired by Google. And each team was provided the identical hardware, each team funded by DARPA. And then the task of each team was to endow this hardware with something akin to a central nervous system and something akin to a mind. So it could reason about what its sensors detected, plan its task, and accomplish the task.
So then if it can, for instance, you know, turn on a fire hose or drill a hole in a wall or that kind of thing, did you design specifically in order to demonstrate Running Man, a kind of a specially designed disaster area, one that humans might have difficulty in?
Yes, the scenario, the DARPA challenge had three phases, and this final phase in California was the third phase. And at each phase, the tasks were increasingly difficult, but always based around DARPA's vision for what a robot might do in a disaster scenario.
And you also won money for that as well, of course, which is all very handy in terms of development and research. You won about $1 million, I believe. Just as a matter of interest, what height would the robot be?
The kind of robot we used is about 6 feet 2.5 inches tall and weighs about 400 pounds.
And is that important? I mean, like, is height as important as every other aspect of it? I mean, could it have been 5 foot 6? Could it have been 6 foot 6?
5 foot 6 would have been nicer in many ways. Being as large and heavy provided additional engineering challenges. For example, Running Man couldn't fit in the little vehicle they had. So Running Man had to sit in the passenger seat and drive with its left hand. It was kind of comical.
Okay, well, you have recently dismissed reports from other experts. I mean, Stephen Hawking has raised this one, that, you know, a superhuman AI is the greatest danger and, you know, they can be our friends or whatever, but, you know, we don't know what might happen necessarily and we might be going a bit too fast. Why are people afraid of creating these robotics?
I think it's human nature. You know, this is an old story. We saw it with the advent of trains. Pundits were very frightened at the prospect of moving so quickly over the Earth. And then with the advent of heavier-than-air flight, they were quite apart from the technical objections. You know, people said it was impossible. There were the moral objections that, you know, flight implied flapping and implied nakedness, which was unacceptable. There was also worries that heavier-than-air flyers might lead to bombings. So one can see that long history of this kind of concern. But if he's worried about a particular discipline, I'd be more worried about his discipline than mine. Physics, after all, has brought us lots of interesting things, and I'm very glad for that. But I would say AI is somewhat less dangerous than bombs.
Okay, so okay, so you would assume that AI systems taking over our planet, treating us like domestic pets or worse, is not going to happen.
Absolutely. If that happened, it would be because humans made the choice to build such systems, which would be an unwise choice. You know, if you think back to most of what people seem to think about AI comes from science fiction, you know, from movies like HAL.
I was just going to say that. Like, how many people do you think, like, what percentage of people that you come across might be informed almost entirely, even though they mightn't admit it, by a Hollywood movie?
The great majority. Between movies and television, it seems to have shaped the public mind. But if you'll notice, in the case of HAL, you know, the run amok computer.
From 2001,
absolutely. What a great movie. But the thing about HAL, the problem with HAL wasn't that HAL was too intelligent or that HAL was conscious or that HAL was too artificial. The problem with HAL is that HAL was too human. So HAL embodied all sorts of undesirable human traits.
Yeah, he was smart-ass through the whole movie.
Yeah, and he was paranoid. And, you know, it would be a real problem to make a paranoid computer, and one would wonder why you would do that.
So, you know, the funny thing is what you're saying, almost, that the main hazard, like, it's not that the machine could be too intelligent, but the machine is too damn human.
Yeah, and I would avoid that. Yeah. Right? Building an artificial human seems unwise in many levels. First of all, there is a time-proven, much less expensive method of producing humans. And on top of it, why would we do that, right? We have quite enough humans.
Yeah, right, okay. Well, so then what does the future hold in terms of robotics and artificial intelligence, do you think?
Well, I think in terms of robotics, I think they'll become less expensive and more practical in people's everyday lives. Right now, they're really not. It's still sort of on the edge of practical. In terms of AI, it's all around us. You know, when you send an email and the packets go through a router, most high-end routers use AI and most networks use AI. In other words, most AI isn't a separate thing that you can see that walks and talks and acts like R2. Most AI is just embedded in our life. It's all around us. That will just get better and better. And I think a big push will be to develop systems that fit humans better, that are more tightly coupled to humans.
And what's the biggest challenge, do you think, facing artificial intelligence?
I guess, there are specific sort of very detailed technical challenges, but in the broad sense, I think it really is developing a better fit with humans. You know, human intelligence and machine intelligence are very different. They're both intelligent, right? There's no doubt that computers are intelligent. If you had a dog that could regularly beat Kasparov in chess, people would acclaim it the most intelligent dog in the world. It would be on all the talk shows, be on this show. But because a computer does it, we say, well, that's not really intelligent. So the first thing is to understand is, yes, these machines really are intelligent, but they're not like us, just like aircraft aren't like birds. But both really and truly fly.
Right. Good point. All right. Okay. So, I mean, this is a bit unfair. I'm asking you to do your Madame Zola bit and look into your crystal ball. But what will be the next big creation, if I can call it that will change the world for us, do you think?
My crystal ball is probably not a lot better than yours, but in the near term, it might be reasonably good. And so in the near term, we're seeing very fast advances in language translation and human-machine dialogue, where humans and computers can have a fruitful discussion where the computer actually understands the meaning of what the humans are saying. And this will change a lot of things. Instead of talking to somebody halfway around the world when you call the help desk that's pretending not to have an accent, you'll be talking to a machine, but it won't be a machine that says press 1 to be annoyed, you know, press 2 to be really annoyed. It will be a machine that understands your intent. This won't happen all at once, but, you know, it's that field is advancing very quickly, that part of AI.
And in terms of human and machine cognition since 1990, I mean, one of the focuses is on developing machines that extend and enhance human physical and mental abilities. The exoskeletons for the paralyzed will be one example?
Absolutely. That's coming gangbusters, mostly driven by the same actuator technology that enables these new humanoid robots like Running Man. So under the hood, a humanoid robot and an exoskeleton, which is really a robot that one wears, use a lot of the same technology. And so exoskeletons for paraplegics, which is a tough one, and exoskeletons for enhanced human performance, those are moving forward quite quickly.
Thank you so much indeed for talking to us, Dr. Ford, and have a great time in Ireland and enjoy yourself while you're here. Dr. Kenneth Ford, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.